right, on our 9 o'clock docket, we have one case. Then we'll recess for a while and pick up our two cases that are on our 10:30 docket. The first case is Ida Haji versus Valentine Enterprises. If the clerk will please announce counsel. All right, Mr. Frieden.
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, as noted, I'm Mike Frieden. I represent Ida Haji, the widow of Mr. Arabu. As y'all know, this case stems from a tragic collision in January of 2009, out on 820, just before 4 o'clock in the morning. Mr. Arabu was driving a delivery truck. He was unfortunately chatting on the phone, and he drove into the back of an 18-wheeler loaded full of lumber. This case is against his employer. It's a group of Valentine entities that we'll just call the Valentine defendants. What we alleged in the lower court was basically that they created an unsafe workplace for him. And the trial court granted two motions for summary judgment that y'all have before you. First one, they threw out our argument that there should have been an airbag in the truck. The delivery truck that he had was a 2007 Isuzu with no airbag. The second one dealt with all of the other claims involving safe workplace, failure to prohibit him from using a cell phone when he was driving, things like that. We believe that the airbag argument is the most serious one, so I'll deal with that one first. We presented evidence that, first as to proximate cause, because you might be thinking, wow, that was a heck of a collision. How do we know that an airbag would have saved him? Well, we presented evidence from Lloyd White, the medical examiner, that said more likely than not, he would have survived a collision if an airbag had deployed. I dare say that everyone in this courtroom got here today in a vehicle that has an airbag. The evidence is that not only did this vehicle not have an airbag, but Mr. Arabu was not warned that it did not have an airbag, because Mr. Valentine has admitted he didn't even know it didn't have an airbag. He assumed it did. So we think that the duty to have an airbag flows primarily from the fact that our allegations are that it was an employee-employer relationship. Mr. Ave will no doubt point the court out to the fact that there are documents that say that he was an independent contractor, that he was forced to sign when he started working there. In the trial court, we cited evidence of the things that Valentine controlled. The reality is that each and every day, Mr. Valentine went to work for Valentine Enterprises. He went exactly where they told him to go. He picked up exactly what they told him to pick up, and then he delivered it to the next location. If they needed him to do something else, they would call him and they would tell him. He leased the truck from them. We have evidence in there that he paid $550 a month to lease the truck. But it wasn't a true lease. Like when you rent a car or lease a car, because when you rent a car or lease a car, you can take it home, you can do really whatever you want with it. In this case, he was not allowed to take the truck home on the weekends. He wasn't allowed to do any of that. There were overtime or hot shot deals, but they all ran through Valentine Enterprises. they may contact Mr. Arabu, but all the money flowed through Valentine Enterprises. Valentine Enterprises controlled everything. He wore Valentine Enterprises shirts sometimes.
Other than the widow's affidavit, what is your evidence of these points that you're now making? Because that the objection was sustained to that. And I know that's another point on your appeal, but let's just say that that stays that way. What's your evidence to support what you just told us?
I believe that we cited some evidence from Mr. Valentine regarding that he did the deliveries that they wanted him to do when they wanted him to do them. But regarding the take-home truck, that was in Ms. Hodges' affidavit. That's true. I didn't get that from Mr. Valentine. So it primarily flows from her affidavit. That's correct. And I'll segue to that, obviously. We believe that the court was wrong in excluding her affidavit. She was, as his wife, she was in the perfect position to know many, many things about him. She was in the position to see whether he brought a truck home over the weekend. He never did. He wasn't allowed to. So I understand that it's knowledge that is personal to her, but just because it is not easily controverted as to her doesn't mean it can't be controverted. That she doesn't have to take back what she said. There can be other evidence that comes forth. So her affidavit should have come in. She was in a position to know those things, and she said those things. The trial court felt that the lack of a federal law requiring there to be an airbag in this 2007 Isuzu truck was important. Now, I agree that it would be nice if there was a federal law that said it should be in there and that they had to include it, but that is not controlling. If this was a negligence per se case, and there was some kind of law that said if you have a delivery driver, they've got to be in a vehicle with an airbag, we'd be talking about a different case. We're talking about a safe workplace. And in a safe workplace, it is inconceivable that in this modern world, in 2009, that was part of the modern world, that you would be in a vehicle without an airbag. This was not the late 90s when they were first extending to passengers. This is way down the road. Everyone expects to have an airbag to protect them. And if they don't, they deserve a warning. If you come across a very old vehicle from the 50s, 60s, so actually up through the 80s, you might be on notice, if you think about it, that there's not an airbag. my next door neighbor has a 1986 Celica, and they're very nice people, but I've forbidden my kids from ever riding with them because I know, as a products liability attorney, that there's no airbags, there's no protection. So simply because there's not a federal law, that is not controlling. We analogized this to seatbelt law. It's a development, it's a progression, but if there were a case where someone made their employees ride in a vehicle without seatbelts before they were mandated way back in the day, we'd be making the same argument. You knew there were seatbelts. You didn't give these people the benefit of those. It's not a safe workplace. And in this case, we cited testimony from Mr. Valentine himself, page 89 of the record, where he I asked him, so did you understand you had a responsibility to provide a safe workplace for your drivers? And he said, a safe workplace? And I said, yeah. And he said, I would say a safe truck. At the very least, Mr. Valentine, you know, assumed the responsibility to providing a safe truck to Mr. Arabu, whether Mr. Arabu was an employee or an independent contractor. He's the one that took his money to lease him the truck, but he didn't protect him the way that he should. So we believe that that motion for summary judgment should be overturned.
Braden, do you believe the workplace was the truck?
Yes, Your Honor, the workplace was the truck. 99% of the work he did was driving that truck to and fro. So yes, that was his mobile workplace.
His workplace was not the highways and byways that he found himself driving on when he was driving the truck doing his work as instructed by Valentine.
Well, Your Honor, that's, I mean, I guess that's part of his workplace too, but I guess we couldn't, we're not saying Valentine was responsible for putting that 18-wheeler there and for him hitting it. We're just saying he didn't give him the proper tools when he went out in his workplace. But it's a good point. I guess every mile to and from Abilene every morning was, in essence, part of his workplace.
Was there any evidence admitted that indicated Mr. Arabu drove other people's trucks?
No, there was not, Your Honor. No, there was not.
It looks like there was some evidence submitted about Valentine's not paying payroll taxes. So did most of the drivers there get, like, 1099s or?
Every driver there got a 1099. Yes, Your Honor. And we have alleged that Mr. Valentine's payroll games are not controlling in this case. Mr. Valentine took over the contract at Reynolds Company, which is where Mr. Arabu delivered from, brought every ex-employee in, signed them all up, and they magically went from employees to independent contractors at that moment, in Mr. Valentine's eyes. But I don't believe in the law's eyes. Okay. The trial court, although the defendants did not move for motion for summary judgment on failure to warn, it was granted anyway. We believe that because failure to warn was not requested, that was improper, and that in essence, it's not something that is subsumed in the other thing. That can be an independent tort in and of itself. If the reality is that if there's a ruling that no, the airbag just doesn't work, there can still be a tort for not warning someone that you're not protected. Then make your decision. You're not protected. You can stay here and you can drive for us, or you can be gone. But when you don't give someone the chance, you failed in your duty to warn.
Well, isn't this a little bit different than it not working? Because I think their argument is we had no duty to provide an airbag, and therefore if we had no duty to provide an airbag, we didn't have any duty to warn that no airbag was provided. And that I see to be a bit different than if something doesn't work. Do you not see a difference?
No, Your Honor, and I guess the doesn't work, I've got a problem. If it didn't work, then it'd be a products liability case. It'd be a totally different deal. There was no airbag, so it was never going to work. But I see what you're saying, that they're saying that because there was no duty to warn arises from it. I guess my difference is, obviously, I believe there was a duty, or even if there was not a duty because of the employer, I think that he basically assumed a duty. through his testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Frieden. Mr. Ave.
May it please the court, Your Honors, my name is Greg Ave. I'm appearing on behalf of the Valentine and Prizes, the appellees in this matter, with respect to the trial court's summary judgment. I'd like to first begin by addressing some of the issues that came up during the presentation by the appellant in this matter. And the first goes to Justice Meyer's question about the workplace. And I think that it's a question that actually underlines and with a orange highlighter what's being asked to be done here, the duty that's being asked to be imposed. Because if that vehicle is the workplace, and if we assume Valentine is Mr. Abu's employer, then his duty extends to wherever that truck goes. In other words, that is his workplace because he is allegedly hired or employed as a driver. Therefore, an employer's duty in terms of a safe workplace extends to everywhere that truck goes, not just the public highways, but every piece of private property it enters. In other words, the employer becomes the guarantor of the safety of the employee or independent contractor wherever he may go. And that, I would submit to the court, is an unprecedented argument in terms of an extension of a duty. And the other is something that is a common thread that runs through the appellant's presentation about this truck, and that it's a 2007 flatbed truck. This accident happened in January of 2009. This vehicle was less than 2 years old at the time of the accident. Mr. Valentine testified he didn't even know it didn't have an airbag in it and thought it did. So what we have here is a situation where, in essence, Mr. Valentine is, presumably since Isuzu was not sued for producing a defective product that didn't have an airbag, since only Mr. Valentine apparently was the person who was supposed to know how to equip a vehicle safely, his duty is paramount and trumps everyone else's duty, including the manufacturer of the vehicle, who is obliged to comply with federal safety standards with regard to whether or not a commercial vehicle of this nature is required to have an airbag. And I would submit to the court that the question of duty, which is a question of law, which is drawn from the totality of the circumstances surrounding the situation, there is not a single fact that's been presented in this record, in this summary judgment record, which supports the proposition of imposing a duty to provide a truck with an airbag in it to someone in this situation, or whatever the relationship is. And on that note, I'd like to turn and look quickly at the affidavit. I believe that the court can dispose of this case on the duty issue or the proximate causation issue without even addressing the employee-employer issue. But let's be clear, the only evidence, only supposed evidence in the record of an employment relationship between Valentine's Mr. Arabu, is the affidavit of his wife, which is on page 236 and 237 of the record. And it is, when you look at it, approximately one page, actually, when you take the caption away and the signature line of page. And I submit that there is not one bit of foundation for her testimony in here. Does she say she was Arabu's wife? Yes, she does. But there is, I don't think that anyone can make a compelling or even reasoned argument by simply saying, I have a relationship with someone. Now I can testify as to anything and everything I want to about that person. It just doesn't hold up logically. There's nothing in this affidavit to support the proposition that she knew or had a reason to know any of the things she says in this affidavit. And that is precisely why Judge Evans struck this entire affidavit, because it's not evidence of anything. Could this testimony, as I believe Chief Justice Livingston pointed out, been adduced by other sources? Absolutely. For instance, Mr. Valentine, if in fact it exists. But that didn't happen. So the fact of the matter is, there is no evidence in this record as to an employer-employee relationship. But let's assume for this discussion that there was one. Let's just assume that they proved or created a fact issue as to whether there was an employer-employee relationship. The issue then becomes, again, right back where we started, the issue, a fundamental issue of duty, an issue of do you provide someone, does an employer have a duty to provide an employee who's in the delivery business a vehicle that has an airbag when no such device is required by law? I would submit there is absolutely, even if we were to go outside the record and we were just to sit here and postulate about vehicles and such, I don't believe a compelling argument could be made for the law to impose such a duty, a super duty, if you will, above that of the manufacturer. And I think the duty issue is intimately familiar to this panel. I don't need to keep harping on it. But the other thing I'd like to point out to the court is the issue of causation. Again, both motions for summary judgment filed by Valentine, both motions attacked all four elements of the allegation of negligence against Valentine. No duty, no breach, no proximate cause, no damages. The only evidence that we have, and in my estimation, it's important to look at what's actually alleged, the allegations that were being attacked by the motion for summary judgment. In this instance, the allegation in the second amended petition, page 62 of the record, is that Valentine was negligent with regard to providing Arabu with substandard equipment. The equipment was substandard because it did not have a driver's side airbag. Defendants were negligent by failing to warn Mr. Arabu that he was not protected by a driver's side airbag. Defendants were negligent in not restricting and regulating the cell phone use while on the job. Defendants were negligent overworking Mr. Arabu. Defendants were negligent by not providing Mr. Arabu with a safe workplace. With respect to causation, I think it's very important to consider the record as to what was alleged. The above referenced acts or omissions, when taken separately or cumulatively, were a proximate cause of the collision and the resulting injuries and damages sustained by the plaintiff. So here, they do not allege that we proximately caused this injuries by this separate independent act, but they say that we caused the collision. We didn't write this petition. The defendant didn't come up with this theory of liability. The plaintiff did. And here the allegation is that we caused the collision. Ms. Hygie points to the affidavit of the medical examiner in this instance as evidence of causation. Well, I think that affidavit is circumspect in and of itself. Even if you accept it at face value, that it creates some evidence as to whether or not providing an airbag could have been causation, that's not what they allege. It's not the defendant's job, in this instance the appellee's job, to attack a theory that's not asserted. It's to attack what's in the record, what's actually alleged, and that's what we did. With respect to the warning issue, I believe Judge Scambrell addressed that issue or brought that issue up, and I'd just like to touch on it before I finish up. And that is, there cannot be a duty to warn about a dangerous or unsafe workplace if there wasn't an unsafe workplace. That's number one. So therefore, the predicate alleged condition didn't exist and was demonstrated, or the lack of it was demonstrated or established by the original motion for summary judgment. But the second is, it's important to remember what we moved for summary judgment on. And this was addressed by the Supreme Court earlier this year in the Nall versus Plunkett case, where there was argued, hey, we alleged a separate theory of liability. We alleged you did a negligent undertaking in addition to a social host liability theory. These are separate theories, therefore, when you only address social host liability, you fail to address the negligent undertaking allegation. And the Supreme Court said, wrong. Look at the motion for summary judgment. It says they're moving for summary judgment on the lack of a legal duty, the fundamental basis for common law and negligence, duty. And where you say there's no duty, you're not picking a single cause of action. You're saying you owe no duty. Therefore, when you file a no evidence motion for summary judgment attacking the absence of any duty or other elements of a cause of action for negligence, you're attacking them all, which is precisely what happened in this case. Number one, there can't be a failure to warn because of the finding as to the lack of a duty to provide a truck with an airbag. But secondarily, the motion itself did address that issue when it addressed the absence of any duty owed by Valentine to Mr. Arabu. So on that basis, this is a kind of a hollow argument that the motion asked for, we were granted more relief than was awarded. This issue was specifically addressed in both Judge Evans' letter explaining what his ruling was going to be and in the order that he had Valentine prepare in this case, which addressed all the claims of the plaintiffs in this case. So, again,
did you cite to that case in your brief?
I did not, Your Honor. I believe it came in afterwards. I'll provide a letter brief, but for the record, Now versus Plunkett is found at 404 Southwest 3rd, 552, and it was decided June 28th of this year. Mm-hmm. We believe that the decision reached by Judge Evans in this case was supported by the law and supported by the facts, and more importantly, it's supported by public policy. The basis here, which the plaintiff seeks to impose liability on the defendants, I don't think they have even remotely attempted to cite a case that extended the law in this regard, and I think the reason is because it is such a stretch. It is truly unprecedented in our estimation, and there is no compelling basis to do it. Again, why did this accident happen? Mr. Frieden was candid and said why. Mr. Arabu was talking on his cell phone and ran into the back of a truck. That is not the basis on which, respectfully, we believe this court should extend a duty to, if in fact we are his employer, which we're not, but to extend a duty to an employer in this situation to ensure that vehicles that are provided to drivers have airbags when federal law doesn't even require it. We'd ask the court to affirm the summary judgment entered by the trial court and grant us all the other relief sought in our brief. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ave. Mr. Frieden, rebuttal?
Yes,
sir. Mr. Ave claims that this is a dramatic extension of duty that we would be asking you to make a trucking company such as them a guarantor of wherever in the world people went. That's absolutely false because there's already broad coverage of employer-employee relationships. If this was a situation where there had been genuine overwork, they had worked him 18 hours the day before. He slept 3 hours. They said, I don't care how tired you are. Get on out there. Then wherever he drove, in essence, if there was a horrible crash and it could be linked back to his exhaustion caused by them, it would already cover. It would already be quite expansive. So that is not a stretch. It's not a stretch at all. And so we don't think that we're asking this court to do anything novel or unprecedented. Honestly, we couldn't find a case like this. That's quite true. And I think my guesses would be that it's because people have been fortunate enough to be protected in accidents. I mean, if there had been an airbag and it didn't save his life, then we may be here under some of the other allegations, but we wouldn't be able to complain about the vehicle. Our complaint about the vehicle is it's quite clear, and I know he loves the fact there's not a federal law requiring it, but that doesn't dictate a safe workplace. There may be no law that says that, at my law firm, Mr. Noteboom can't keep a vicious dog by the copier. There may be no law against that, but if he did keep a vicious dog by the copier and it bit someone, we'd have an argument that that's not a safe workplace. There's no law about that.
Around his argument in your pleading, you said that their failure caused the collision. What evidence is there to defeat a no evidence motion for summary judgment if your pleading says that the failure to have an airbag caused the collision?
There is no evidence that the failure to have an airbag caused the collision. It didn't cause the collision. It caused the damages that flowed from the collision. And I continue to believe that our pleadings were broad enough to cover that. That's just one element of their negligence. But you're right. From a technical standpoint, the lack of an airbag didn't make him drive into the back of that truck. That's quite true.
But there's plenty of case law on failure to have seat belts, failure to have working brakes in a vehicle. I mean, aren't those cases some that we could draw analogies to the fact pattern in this one?
Definitely. Definitely. Airbags are new, but the principles of safe vehicles have been around for a long time.
Braden, I want to compliment you on your analogy drawn on page 12 of your original brief when you're attempting to explain that there has been at least one Texas case that deals with the workplace being where a cowboy was roping cattle from the back of a pickup truck, and that was not a safe place for him to work and sued his employee on that. I was hoping that what you might say in one of those sentences that he could have put a saddle in there so that he had a device he could hold on to when he roped the cattle and wrapped a rope around the saddle horn. And I appreciate your analogy there, and it's thoughtful. But I did observe that you started that analogy with the statement, Texas courts have not ruled on this specific issue when you're talking about airbags. So we're cutting new ground here if we do rule that an airbag is a required safety measure in providing a safe workplace for an employee, aren't we?
Yes, you are, but I think that cutting new ground is fine, Your Honor.
Thank you. I appreciate your help.
Gentlemen, we appreciate all your arguments today and your briefing that you've provided to this court. Your case is now submitted and you are excused. We will recess for about 55 minutes.